Europeans are kept waiting for specifics on Federal Reserve-style stimulus. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The focus of market players today was a media briefing by the head of the European Central Bank, who's trying to cope with some big economies that are flagging, including France, Germany, Italy. Beyond news, the ECB will leave interest rates unchanged at near zero. The question is, what about quantitative easing? Will the ECB ever start buying bonds to bring some juice to countries that use the euro? Adolfo Laurenti is chief international economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Hello, my friend.
Good morning.
What did Europe's central banker in the end actually say about some new stimulus?
Not much. They say they will consider when needed, which is, thank you very much, what we already knew. I think they have, in fact, decided to wait to 2015 for any decision on this front.
Central bankers very good at vagueness. Now, it is hard to figure out if there is inflation or not, or if Europe needs stimulus or not, with all these oil prices falling.
Well, that's part of the challenge. We know that the cheaper oil will be good for all the economies, advanced economies, including the United States, but especially Europe, because it put more money in the pockets of the people, and that really helped to create and generate growth. On the other side, in the very short term, so cheaper oil is really adding to the deflation trend, which is exactly what the central bank in Europe is trying to fight. So I think the European Central Bank is trying to buy some time and manage the transition between these two forces.
All right, Adolfo Laurenti, who's chief international economist at Mesirow in Chicago. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
One reason why healthcare spending continues to rise is that patients and prescribing doctors often favor the shiniest new treatments. But the Peterson Center on Healthcare, this launches today, has this notion that there's a solution for better care and lower costs that is hidden in plain sight. From our health desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Dan Gorenstein reports.
In a sense, the Peterson Center will act like some crusty old baseball scout freezing his tuchus off on the bleachers. Hunting, says Executive Director Jeffrey Selberg, for high-quality, low-cost best practices.
The question is finding them, validating them, and then figuring out how to facilitate the rapid adoption across the country.
Selberg says the Institute of Medicine has found it takes 17 years to spread a good idea across healthcare. With $200 million from its parent, the Peterson Foundation, the center promises to speed that up and help make adoption easy. Avalere Health's Dan Mendelson says the center comes at an opportune time.
There is really no consensus right now on what to do about the cost issue and how the system needs to be changed to improve quality and reduce costs simultaneously.
To avoid just being the latest in a long line of shiny new things, the center must do what many have failed to do before: get good ideas to stick. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Don't you hate it at the Kansas, Nebraska, or Ohio, Kentucky borders, waiting in line to show your passport, get your visa, and schlep your stuff through customs? All right, it hasn't gotten that far yet. But free trade does not exist between the American states. Here to explain why that is and why fixing this might boost jobs in the economy is Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell. Chris, good morning.
How are you doing, David?
What are you talking about? Every morning I go from New Jersey across the state line to New York, and nobody stops me, and it seems like the trade flows freely. But you say there are barriers?
There are enormous barriers to mobility in many professions. So physicians and lawyers, of course, we all know about that. But there's also occupational licenses for interior designers, nurses, barbers, manicurists. You may be a really good manicurist in one state, and you can't cross the border and apply your profession.
I mean, that is a thorny issue, whether or not the states have the right to decide their own standards. But beyond that, you and I were trading emails. You mentioned medieval guilds. You think that's what these licensings are a bit like?
It is a restraint of trade. And there's economist Morris Kleiner, University of Minnesota, and Alan Krueger, Princeton University. And they have calculated that less than 5% of the U.S. workforce in the early 1950s was in occupations that was covered by licensing laws. That has now swelled to almost 30%.
I'm hearing you, but you can imagine the concern that what would happen is a kind of spiraling downward to the lowest common denominator on standards for some of these professions. And you do want some standards depending on what the profession is.
There's always a problem in this discussion where you have regulation and deregulation. It's sort of like you have all these rules and then no rules. But there are things that can go in between. So certification is a much cheaper alternative where the government or a nonprofit agency or an industry group, they'll do an exam. You have to pass that exam and it says, okay, you can practice this. The thing about these occupational licenses is if you practice without the stamp of approval, the power of the state comes down on you hard. And that is an expensive way to restrain trade. And I think we need to move away from that and embrace certification and competition.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor is Chris Farrell. He's author of the recent book, Unretirement. Chris, thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
And the other day we were talking about all the hedge funds closing down for good after they didn't beat the market this year. Well, the opposite of a high-fee hedge fund is the index fund, where a low-paid computer algorithm simply tracks your favorite stock index. There's news today that, for instance, Vanguard's index funds are booming, scooping up $21 billion in new money from clients in November. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.